Hi, this is John Griffin from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hockey fans from around the world. I am Richard Cote, the producer of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. It is the second line edition of the podcast, and you know what that means. No, it's not more than a feeling. It means I am joined by the publisher of ProHockeyNews.com, Lou Lafredo. Lou, how are you doing?
I am doing really well. We were talking in the pre-show rundown about the hot teams. And as it so happens, I am reading a book that will show up on the PHN book reviews here before the next couple of weeks. And it's by Rick Carpiniello. Excuse me. Sorry about that, Rick. But he's written a book, The Franchise. It's a story of the New York Rangers. And as a hockey fan and New York Rangers fan, this is a really good book. I'm looking forward to finishing it and putting a book review together.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. We are also joined by our snarky Canadian up there in Edmonton, Jacob Doherty. Jacob, how are things up north there?
Two wins.
That's a start. Then you start stringing those together, and next thing you know it, you're back in the thick of things, right?
We'll see.
They'll be in the thick of something.
Hey, we had a really, really awesome event, which I think we're going to be talking about later on. So,
yeah.
Yep. All right. Listeners, as you know, on the second line, I usually have this time to rant about things going on in my life that are either, mostly it's either food, hockey, or car related. I've got none of those. And in fact, we got different issues we're going to be talking about later on in this episode. So I am going to forego the rant. To shake things up a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the minor leagues before we get going on what's happened in the EIHL, because if you've been reading any of the news in the last week or so, you are familiar with what had happened in that league, and we will be touching on that here in a bit. Let's start with the ECHL and take a peek at the standings there. Just going over the top four in each division, points-wise, I remembered to organize it by points this time. That way I don't have to do two takes. The Trois-Vieilles Lions are in the number one spot in the North Division with 8 points. The Newfoundland Growlers hot on their heels with 8 points. The Norfolk Admirals in the number three spot with 5 points. And the Worcester Railers in the number four spot, rounding out your top four with 4 points. Going to the South Division, the Atlanta Gladiators on top of that division with 8 points, the Jacksonville Icemen with 7 points in the number two spot, the Greensville Swamp Rabbits in the number three spot with 6 points, and right behind them, also with 6 points, is the South Carolina Stingrays. Florida Everblades dropped just a bit out of the top four, but they got a few games to play this weekend. I'm sure they'll be getting back into that position here shortly. Looking at the Central Division, we have the Wheeling Nailers in the number one spot with 4 points. The Indy Fuel with 4 points. Everybody in the top four spots all has 4 points. We'll just go down the list. Wheeling Nailers, Indy Fuel, Fort Wayne Comets, and the Kalamazoo Wings are your top four in the Central Division. Again, all with 4 points. In the Mountain Division, we have the Kansas City Mavericks, who are starting to pull away early, undefeated. We'll talk about that here in just a second, with 12 points. The Idaho Steelheads, early exit last season. I believe it was, yes, it was the Steelheads who had an exit. A little disappointing playoff last season, making up for it now. 4-1 to start off the season with 8 points in that number two spot. The Wichita Thunder in the number three spot with 6 points, and the Rapid City Rush rounding out your top four with 5 points. Lou, yeah. We've been talking about hot teams starting all season long, especially in the NHL. We have an undefeated team in the ECHL with the Kansas City Mavericks. 6-game winning streak, 12 points, 23 goals for, 14 goals against. What's clicking for the Mavericks?
defense. In this case, it's the only team with fewer goals against, actually, is are the Utah Grizzlies. But Utah has played two fewer games. As you said, 14 goals against, 23-4. The defense is winning it for them because the goal differential was just a +9. So they're winning close, low-scoring games.
Yeah.
Simple and as that. Yeah.
As we all know, defense wins championships.
Absolutely.
And we'll be keeping an eye on them. I'm sure next time we meet, they'll have at least one loss in regulation, but who knows? We've had a lot of really hot teams starting off this season. Let's look at the American Hockey League, or the AHL, as the kids like to call it. At the Atlantic Division, we have the Hershey Bears in the number one spot with 14 points. The Hartford Wolfpack in that number two spot with 10 points. The Charlotte Checkers and the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins rounding out your top four, both with 8 points in that division. The North Division, the Rochester Americans have 11 points and are leading that division. The Syracuse Crunch and the Cleveland Monsters and the Toronto Marlies all with 10 points, rounding out that top 10. Again, early season, not a lot of room to create that room in these divisions. In the Central Division, we have the Texas Stars and the Manitoba Moose, both with 8 points in your one and two spots, respectively, there. The Iowa Wild in the number three spot with 7 points, and the Rockford Ice Hogs, I love it when I get to say their name, in the number four spot with 6 points. Looking at the Pacific Division, we were talking about them last time we met. The Henderson Silver Knights cooled off a little bit. They now have 2 losses, but still maintain the number one spot in the Pacific with 12 points. The Abbotsford Canucks and the Calgary Wranglers, both with 11 points in your two and three spots. And the Ontario Reign in the number four spot with 10 points. Let's circle back to the Silver Knights. Their parent club, the Golden Knights, doing quite well. We'll be talking about them later on in this episode. But we talked about the hot start that that Henderson got off to begin the season. Looks like they've cooled off just a bit since then, Lou.
Yeah, they lost to the Reign during the week, which sort of ended that season opening string. Mm-hmm. But again, they were actually, it was a 4-1 loss that stopped the string. So they had a bad game or two. But again, you know, one of the things we talked about 2 weeks ago was Vegas is stacked up there on the strip. And so there's not a lot of room for the prospects and talent in Henderson to move up yet. Right. But I suspect that that'll start to happen as this season wears on. But Henderson is, you know, Vegas has put together a great team in Vegas. And all of their prospects, all of their talent, their future talent is making a name for themselves down in Henderson. So,
yep. Yeah, no, definitely great work that they're doing in both the AHL and the NHL levels there with those two franchises. It'll be exciting to see how this plays out going down the as we get further into the season. All right. So we've gone over the two minor league the minor league leagues here in North America. Let's go over to what's happened in the EIHL out there in the UK. Some pretty traumatic events happening. And listeners, I apologize if I start to stumble a little bit here or find it a little bit hard to express my thoughts here. We had a tragic loss of life in that league last weekend. Adam Johnson, who was a former NHL player, who was playing out in that league, suffered a cut from a skate to his neck and ended up passing away. Lou, this is a league that you were really closely tied into, and you do get a lot of reports from there. Can you kind of recap the events of last weekend and kind of where we stand right now?
Yeah, so this one was Johnson was skating into the zone, into the offensive zone, and he iced for the Nottingham Panthers in the EIHL, and Nottingham was in Sheffield to play the Steelers. Just to give a little bit more detail about the events. Not going to mention the player's name, but there was. There was contact. If you saw the video, there was contact between, it looked like some contact between two Steelers players. So a forward coming back on the back check and a defenseman, faced up against, Johnson. And the way I've described it to people who have not played hockey is, that no matter how fluid and how well trained and how much talent players have, Richard, you'll agree to this, and at some point, Jacob, you'll do the same when you really start playing. Players can and skaters can get into the oddest positions, right?
Yeah.
You know, because particularly at our level, you know, there's less control. What seemed to have happened was that there was a that bump, what looked like a bump between two of the players on the Steelers, and the leg of one of them came up and cut Johnson. I think we'll just leave it at that. Mm-hmm. We have reached out to our folks in Sheffield, and the impression I get is that for our listeners, that the trauma of last week is still there. Right. Mick Johnson, our photojournalist in Sheffield, I have not heard back from him yet. I'm trying to gauge, you know, his. You know, what kind of self-care he's doing because of what everyone in that arena witnessed in Sheffield. And so I don't know whether you want to get into this now, but two things have happened since the incident. It's been called a freak accident. And the EIHL has mandated now the use of neck protection for all players in the league. And I don't know what sort of pressure they can put on the NIHL and the EIHA organization in the UK, but the mandate does not take effect until January 1. Right. It's not that they're giving anyone time except the manufacturers and suppliers of neck protectors. The soonest that the league will be supplied with sufficient numbers of neck protectors is January 1, 2024. So that's the reason for the delay. The second thing that has happened is, I don't think it's Scotland Yard as much as it is the local constabulary in Sheffield has taken over an investigation of the incident. Mm-hmm. It is being considered not suspicious, but worthy of investigation. Yes, you have to have this investigation. A man died on the ice. Something has to happen. I think having the, whatever the law enforcement agency is out of Sheffield, or is it, you know, Yorkshire related? It has to happen. Let's let that go through. I'm guessing because the league has stepped back, EIHL has had nothing to say outside of support for Nottingham and Sheffield, and canceled all games this week. Beginning Sunday, there's been nothing in the EIHL and won't be anything until tomorrow. So, right. Richard, I'm going to turn it back to you now.
Yeah, and I agree there that, you know, investigations where there is a loss of life, they do need to take place, whether there's something criminal that happened or, you know, whether there's not. In this case, I don't think there was anything criminal, no negligence or anything. It was an accident, but somebody's life was taken. So the investigation needs to go into that, see how it happened. That way we can safeguard going forward to make sure this doesn't happen again, because that's the only way we learn is through investigations like this.
Right.
The EIHL did send out a statement, and I would like to read some of that. And this was immediately after the fact. Their statement is, everyone connected with the Elite Ice Hockey League is still coming to terms with the events of Saturday night and the terrible news that was published Sunday morning. We would like to thank our fans and the global hockey community for their thoughts and wishes for Adam's family, friends, and teammates, as well as to everyone involved in Saturday's game. Now, they mentioned that the games for this upcoming week were postponed, and that games this upcoming weekend starting Saturday are scheduled to happen. All games taking place this weekend will be organized with appropriate and fitting tributes to Adam Johnson. Please bear with us as this needs to be an ongoing process to ensure that all tributes have been agreed with those affected most deeply by what happened. The Elite Ice Hockey League will give further details of the planned tributes ahead of the weekend. And we hope that fans from all around the league will feel able to come together to pay tribute to Adam as part of a very sad and difficult process for everybody. And then there's the other side, Adam's passing, that, makes me for a moment think about, is this a game that I still want to put my body on the ice for? Like, is this something that could happen to me? And I think that's, going forward, that's going to be a big question for a lot of people who might be trying to get into the sport, or those who are still currently playing the sport, maybe not at a professional level, at a recreation level, saying, do I want to get involved if I know that this can happen? And Lou, I share your sentiment about the freak accident. I don't see it as that. I just see it as what it is. It was an accident, plain and simple. You don't need to qualify it with anything else. It was extremely unfortunate, and it was a major loss for the hockey community.
I'm sorry, but don't you? I guess I see the league trying, the EIHL trying to not downplay it, but tamp down the controversy by saying it was a freak accident.
Yes,
that's all. To be honest, I think it was a poor choice of words.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
If I had any complaint about any of it, is they really should not have leaned on that phrasing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, that came from the PR office, and that's their job is at this point damage control. But The damage is done. Everybody knows what happened. Like, extremely poor choice. But we're now starting to see the ripple effects about what happened with Adam in the NHL. We're seeing some players who are starting to sport those neck guards in practices. One player even tried, Ramis Dahlin, even tried playing a game with one of those. He complained of his body temperature getting too high, so he ended up taking it off halfway through the game. But we've seen players like TJ Oshie and Tom Wilson wearing those during practice. Jacob, do you think that we're going to be seeing more and more players as we go further into the season starting to adopt these, or is this just a knee-jerk reaction at this point?
I think it's a bit of both. I think right now what I think is going to happen is a lot of people are going to start trying it. And with Rasmus Dahlin, and the overheating problems, I think maybe with getting a different type of neck guard, I don't know how many manufacturers there are, what materials are used. If there's a more breathable one, maybe players will probably enjoy that. I do think that coming into the next season, the 24-25 season, I think we'll probably see net guards become or be voted on to be mandatory. They can't do anything. They can't enforce anything right now in the NHL. Right. They can recommend it strongly and they can provide it, but that's on the players to choose. You're going to have to wait till next season before you can see any changes on that front. But yeah, it's not a great situation. And obviously people who knew Adam Johnson are, who saw the video are going to be affected in a way. And it's normal in my opinion.
Absolutely. And going back to TJ Oshie, who we've seen him with the guard on, and he does own a company who makes shirts with, you know, complete with wrist guards, neck guards, protective socks. This is a player who's very conscious about the hazards of the game. And he was asked about wearing the neck guard, and he told a reporter for for Montreal Sportsnet quote, "We're grown men. You can make your own choices. I made my choice for my kids and I want to stick around for them. I'm just trying to decrease the chance of injury." Full disclosure, yes, he does have a company that does support, protective gear. And, you know, this is something that would definitely help that company out. But, you know, a player like this, this is more or less an honest statement from him, just, you know, pushing that, you know, it's a choice, but, you know, do you really want to risk, you know, something catastrophic happening like that? It's the whole, do you go with, a visor or full face shield in rec league? Well, you know, while you can control your body to a certain extent, you can't control everybody else's. You can't control where the puck goes. I've hit teammates in the face with a puck. You can try and protect yourself the best you can to prevent the catastrophic injuries. And I mean, I guess that's what I got on that. Listeners, I'm sorry if I'm having a hard time trying to find my words. This has been a truly eye-opening and traumatic experience for this community. So, as we talked about the EIHL making neck guards mandatory going into the 2024 or starting in 2024, January 1st, we're seeing leagues here in North America. We're seeing some NHL clubs making it mandatory for their AHL and ECHL affiliates. The Pittsburgh Penguins have made it mandatory for their affiliates, for their players to be wearing these neck guards because, I mean, Adam Johnson, former Pittsburgh Penguin, this hits really close to home for all those players, for the front office, for everybody who was involved in that team, to see one of their own go down like that. So they're making it mandatory. And I think there's been a big push to try and get more of the youth leagues to accept and to adopt neck protection. I believe there are youth leagues in Canada that make it mandatory for players to wear these neck guards. But USA Hockey at this point, they strongly recommend it, but it is still not required to play youth hockey here in the US. So, at this point, the best we can do is keep stressing, wear what you can. It doesn't make you any less of an athlete. Protect yourself as best you can. And especially for those of us, Lou, you and me, they were getting up in years. We're not getting paid to play this game. You know, we're not getting millions of dollars to do this. We're doing this for fun. Why not protect yourself the best you can so that you can keep having fun?
Right. And you know, when I asked you earlier if you were playing yet and what was your response when you can skate better? You know, to be honest with you, it's the best. Those are the best words that you probably could have said in response. That is far more responsible on your part and any other skater's part than anything else. You're not going to step out on the ice in, you know, full gear and, you know, or even during stick and puck or something like that, and risk life, literally risk life and limb. So I think that's sort of the message that needs to be taken forward.
And hell, I even had to have stitches because of a stray puck at one point.
Oh, so. No kidding. Oh, wow.
Yeah, on my face. So it was...
Jeez. Don't you have a bird cage? Not yet. I hope you have one.
I do.
Yeah. Okay.
But when you're at the ODRs in Canada, like, everyone's just wearing a toque, right?
Oh,
there you go.
Wow.
I learned my lesson now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is so, Richard, you are playing.
I'm still playing, yes.
I am, quote unquote, retired for the last 12 years. And Jacob is about to step into a hockey career, rec hockey career. How does this impact your decisions? Richard, you sort of opened the door to this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts about this?
I mean, like I said, it did give me pause thinking, well, I mean, if this can happen at an elite level, what's to say it's not going to happen to me? And, you know, I mentioned earlier, I've deflected pucks and I've hit, you know, teammates in the face with a puck because they weren't wearing a full cage. And, you know, puck goes off my stick and up and into the, like, underneath their visor. And he now wears a full cage, but it was because of me. But I try and take as many precautions as possible. When the NHL started, they didn't mandate it, but once more NHL players started wearing what are called skate fenders, the hard plastic shells that go around the soft part of your boot, I thought, wait a minute. Again, I'm not getting paid to do this. I'm going out on a Sunday night just to go have fun with my friends. I may as well not break a foot and just wear a hard plastic shell over my boot that costs $50. I still wear them to this day. And I maybe have one other teammate who does, but, you know, I've deflected so many pucks off of my feet. I don't, you know, who's to know which one could have broken my foot.
Right.
And I don't have the health insurance that professional athletes have. Like, my body is not my job. I still have to go to work in the morning. So, you know, I'm going to be seriously looking into getting some neck protection after this, just knowing that this is a possibility. It's still hasn't scared me away from the game, thankfully. And I feel like I can still play, but it is still going to be in the back of my mind.
Sure. Jacob, what about you?
I have a bit more of a, it might be, it's, I know it's because of my youth, but to a degree, I will take I'll take the smart risk mitigating factors, and that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love this sport.
Yeah.
It's very fun to me. And people die a lot with everything. It's tragic, it's awful, and the best thing you can do is to be as safe as possible, to wear the proper equipment. As long as I do that, I think I should be fine. It doesn't move the needle for me, because I know there are solutions to these incidences, and stuff happens all the time. I know so many people that have gotten injured. I mean, we see injuries every day in professional hockey, rec hockey, just everything, right? Things happen. And as long as at the end of the day, you're able to enjoy it, enjoy the sport, and have fun, I think that's what's important.
Okay.
We're all doing this for fun.
Jacob, I think you made a good point there, is being as safe as possible. To me, that extends to just wearing adequate protection. And when stuff like this pops up, think about, you know, one, what is the likelihood this could happen to me? I mean, this is happening at a professional level where, you know, skaters are very much in control of their body. What scared me the most about starting up hockey, and I don't know if I was actually, I don't know if I was on your team yet, Lou, in my first season. I knew absolutely nothing about any of the gear. I kind of figured out how to put it on, but I knew next to nothing about how it went together, you know, what good gear looked like. I didn't even know you had to get your skates cut when you first bought them. Right. I was like, oh yeah, I got skates. I'm just going to go out on the ice. I was slipping and sliding everywhere. My name was Snowman, or my name was Butter Knives for the rest of the season, because I did not have an edge. That after that game, I went, got them cut, got them properly done. I was able to skate, still couldn't stop. And now I can still only stop on my right side, but you know, it's that level. It's the entry level that scares me the most, because it's 10 skaters out on the ice all at once who have little to no control over their bodies. And I have no idea where anybody's limbs, including my own, are going. So that is when I'm going to be the most conscious. I'm going to be wearing the full cage. I'm going to be wearing my skate fenders, and I would be wearing neck protection at this point, just knowing that, you know, if it's not a skate, it's a stick could still get you up in the throat. It may not be a life-threatening injury, but it could cause significant damage, depending on how hard that hits you. A puck could hit you from an errant shot. You know, it's the common sense things, especially at that level, when there's so many unknowns.
Sure.
That's just my thought about entry-level hockey, and looking back at it, like, oh yeah, I really wasn't absolutely no control over my body. Jacob, I'm sure you have more control over your body than I did when I started playing ice hockey. I'm glad to hear that this has not swayed your opinion to keep pursuing playing rec league hockey.
Yeah, honestly, for me right now, I just gotta get better at skating backwards. I can glide backwards, I can turn, stop, shoot, everything like that. Just getting more control, I think, for me. And that's just more of a comfort thing personally, just so I'm having a good time. Mostly. And safety also helps. I'm not the biggest guy on the planet, but I'm also not the smallest. And like, this just reinforces you have to get the proper equipment.
Yeah.
And now it's just one. This isn't just shows us you just need one more piece. Just one more.
Exactly.
One more piece of equipment.
And it doesn't seem like protected. It's intrusive at all. So why not? All right. So before we move on to other stories in the NHL happening right now, I would still like to share, as we're talking about entry-level hockey, the only penalty I ever got when I was playing NM hockey with you, Lou, was when I went into the boards and sandwiched somebody because I couldn't stop. I don't think they could stop either. I got a roughing penalty. I had to serve 2 minutes for that one. But the only penalty in, I think, 3 seasons I played there, just because I was not in control of my body. I owned it. It was obviously it was considered roughing, and I served my penalty, got back out.
I had more than one.
I'm sure. Hot-headed Lou.
actually, none of it was ever a result of being hot-headed. It was more a case of being a smart aleck. I was going to use another word, but I mischievous, I think. I never did anything out of anger or violent intent. It was always, it certainly wasn't good natured, but no, I was being a smart aleck. So Jacob, watch out for people like me.
I definitely have a bit of a mean streak at times. So there's going to be some incidents.
I think the most I ever took in one game were two penalties. I never had a major or anything.
There you go.
That. So, yeah.
All right. So, listeners, if you didn't notice this past weekend, as I sure forgot, there was a Heritage Classic.
Yeah. It was more of a Canadian thing, because 20-year anniversary of the first outdoor hockey game between the Montreal Canadiens and the Edmonton Oilers in Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton. Commonwealth Stadium is one of the biggest stadiums in Canada. It holds, I think, 63-ish thousand people. Big football stadium was meant to host the Commonwealth Games, which is basically a mini Olympics for the UK and all their cool friends. And it's mostly used for their Canadian Football League team, the Edmonton Elk now.
Elk.
And they basically turned that into a nice hockey rink like you see in every other outdoor hockey game. And it was really cool. It looked amazing. There was festivities all around Edmonton for it. It was a big deal. Battle of Alberta this time around. And it was a great game. Went off without a hitch, except for Nickelback. But otherwise, it was a great hockey game. The Oilers won, I think it was 5-2 or 4-2.
5-2.
5-2. And yeah, it was a great game. Edmonton took like all the penalties. 2-5 on threes. Got a shorthanded one. And yeah, it was a great game.
I find it more amazing that while they were playing, there were no goals from Draisaitl or McDavid. There were assists, but there were no goals.
One was pretty much a goal. Like, it was a tip. But
Bouchard's goal, it was assisted by Draisaitl and McDavid. So they both got an assist on that one.
I think that was a point shot. One was a tip on a Draisaitl shot. But I think for that, Draisaitl's Draisaitl. He'll always pass. He'll usually pass if he sees a good opportunity to get an open shot in from a teammate. But McDavid's clearly not healthy. He was definitely rushed back to play. Even against the game last night in Dallas, or against Dallas, he just doesn't look 100%. He looks a lot. He's missing a step. I really hope he gets some rest.
Now, I do have to get your opinion. The uniforms that were worn, you were not a fan of the jersey beforehand. How did it match up having the fake leather pants?
I think that's the worst part. if you put like orange pants or blue pants, like it looks so much better. But the Calgary logos look great. Or the Calgary jerseys look great.
You have to make it look vintage at some point. And what's more vintage than old yellow leather? Nothing. Nothing is more vintage than that.
Anyway. It looked like Mastodon leather.
And Lou would know. Lou would know.
I was around. Me and Fred Flintstone.
Right. All right. The Heritage Classic, sounds like a great day in the Alberta province.
Just in Edmonton. I don't think Calgary had too great of a time.
You know what? When your team is playing outdoors, I feel like you have a good time no matter what. You could wish for a win, but it's a regular season loss. It's not like you were booted from the playoffs.
Imagine traveling from Calgary. You have to go up. You have to watch your team get pummeled. And then 40 minutes into the game, Nickelback steps onto the field.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Yeah, you had mentioned Nickelback was there. Okay. Well,
I mean, they're not bad. They're fine.
A good time had by most, I guess. Heritage Classic sounds like, from our Edmonton reporting, it went off without a hitch. Let's talk about a part of the NHL that has many hitches in it. And that is the San Jose Sharks. If you recall, listeners, 2 weeks ago, and even last week, Adam and I talked about this. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, when is San Jose going to get their first win? When are they going to get their first win? They're at that point, they were 0-4, I believe. They are now, 0-10-1, if I read that correctly, or 0-9-1. They have not won a game this season. They have 1 point for going to a shootout with Colorado early on in the season. just things not looking good for the team from San Jose. Yes, 0-9-1. So yes, 1 point on the season. They have lost 8 straight after going to that shootout against Colorado. Jacob and I had high hopes for the games against Nashville, which they lost 5-1. The game against the Capitals, which they lost, I think 3-1 was the final on that one. And now they're coming off a 10-1 loss to Vancouver, who's playing some fairly good hockey from that club for the first time in quite a while. So things not looking terribly positive for the team from San Jose. And I'm revisiting their schedule. Things aren't looking much better in the month of November. We have a game tomorrow night against the Penguins. I guess it depends on what Penguins team shows up, but then you got the Flyers, the Oilers, the Knights, the Ducks, who are playing much better than I thought they were going to play this season. The Panthers, the Blues, pretty much if you put a team in the NHL against San Jose, favor the other team. But Lou, you are our Southern California hockey guru on this podcast. I know this team is in shambles. They've sold off most of their parts in the last few seasons. Is there any glimmer of hope for the rest of the season?
Honestly, no. And I say that because the Barracuda in the American Hockey League across the street from the Sharks are not having much of a much better season at this point either. So the talent or prospect pool in the American League is not there to rescue the Sharks. And I still say that they gave away Carlson for nothing.
Right.
And you know, he wanted out. He did not want to be part of a rebuild. And so what do you do? You know, David Quinn has put himself in the head coach has put himself in another bad position. I thought that he would have at least been able to manage a respectable, competitive Sharks team this season. But I'm sorry, to lose 10-1 to the Canucks, as well as the Canucks have been playing, is just unacceptable.
Anytime a team gives up double-digit goals is just embarrassing at this level. You could lose a game 10-9, and I feel like your offense was firing on all cylinders, but you played absolutely no defense.
Right.
And at this level, it's truly embarrassing. Yes, looking at their let's revamp our predictions here. Looking at their schedule, knowing that they have Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Edmonton, Vegas, Anaheim, Florida, St. Louis. In my opinion, I don't think they have a shot at a win until right after Thanksgiving when they play the Montreal Canadiens. I think that is their first decent shot at getting a win in the month of November. Then they go and play Vancouver, and then they have the Capitals again. So I don't know. Maybe it's my Boston bias here, but I think that's their first shot at actually getting a win. Not that Montreal's playing terrible, but that's the worst team on the schedule. Maybe St. Louis. I don't know. Maybe I'm starting to talk myself out of it. Maybe a St. Louis win right before that. Jacob, what are your thoughts? What is their first legitimate look at a win?
I think probably I'm going to do the same thing I did last, or 2 weeks ago. I would say Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh hasn't looked great. They don't have as much depth. Their new acquisitions are not playing as well. So I think, they are just if anything, Pittsburgh, but they're not going to be favored to win anything really. Like they're 0-9 and they're basically 0-10.
Yeah. Lou, how about you?
Well, I would agree with Jacob, except Carlson is coming back. So the team might be more ginned up to get a win for Carlson coming back to San Jose. I mean, Pittsburgh, would his team, new teammates will be ginned up. And then it's the Caps after that.
They don't have the Capitals.
They have the Flyers afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, they are not going to beat the Flyers. Although, you know, the Flyers have laid a couple of eggs over the last. So they're not going to, I don't think they'll beat Pittsburgh. They are a 30-70 chance at the Flyers. And then who's after the Flyers? I'm sorry.
You got Edmonton and then Vegas.
Oh, Edmonton. Sorry, Jacob, but I think that's probably a 40-60. You know, Edmonton has got a 60% chance of probably winning that game.
I'd say 70-30, but yeah, I think that's a reasonable. I can understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I meant to go the other way. I'm sorry. I did mean to go the other way, not 60% with Edmonton. 70-80%, you know, a 20-80%. I think the other thing you have to consider is how does the team respond to giving up 10 goals?
Yeah.
If they don't lock it down tomorrow, season's over. Yeah. Not that it isn't now. I mean, it's right. Hard to come back. You've got 1 point, 1 point out of 20.
Yeah, you're 20 points out of first place.
Right, and so if they do not respond, I think the GM and Quinn are on the hot seat already.
Yeah,
if they're not gone before the weekend is out.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, Jacob, you have Pittsburgh. Lou, you have the Oilers. I'm going to go with the Blues the week after that. If they don't get the win on the 16th against the Blues, I don't see them winning until January. But you know what? I've been wrong on this podcast before. This wouldn't be the first time, nor would it be the last time. All right. News coming out of Ottawa. Jacob. Senators losing their first round pick.
They have to lose one first round draft pick because they didn't inform the Vegas Golden Knights that Evgeny Dodonov had a no trade clause.
Ooh.
And that's what caused the Golden Knights and Anaheim Ducks trade to be axed. So, this also cost Pierre Dorion, the general manager, his job. And this caused some friction between the new owner of the Ottawa Senators. I think it's Michael Avenardi. How to pronounce his name, but the new owner was not happy. He was not informed about this, about potential repercussions of that trade prior to purchasing the Ottawa Senators. So that's what's happening. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I mean, if it's something you didn't disclose come trade time when you're closing the deal there, absolutely. I think this is a fitting penalty. And I think I applaud the league for at least getting involved and, you know, making Ottawa own up to whether it was my mistake, I forgot to read the fine print, or more likely, we just didn't want to disclose that. I think a fitting penalty. Lou?
Absolutely, because there are two franchises that were impacted down the line by this. And, you know, imagine the consequential decisions that were or were not made by either of those two as a result. So, sure.
And the new owner is Michael Andlauer.
There you go.
Yeah. But it's unfortunate. I can't imagine that Andlauer is happy with the situation he now finds himself in.
Right.
But I did see one thing that was apparently rare with Pierre Dorion in this trade. He apparently took the trade call alone, which is apparently rare in the NHL. Hmm. And there was nobody with the with him in the room when they made that trade. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
That'll stop.
Yeah, exactly.
The last time that's going to happen.
Pierre Dorion is now looking for a new job.
There you go.
Might be one in San Jose.
Exactly. All right. Well, we talked about teams with slow starts. We talked about teams with hot starts in the minor leagues. Let's talk about teams with hot starts in the NHL very quickly. If you've been living under a rock for the last 3 weeks, you might not know Vegas, Boston, both undefeated in regulation. They have one overtime loss each. So they've missed out on one total point for the season, but still moving strong. We also have Lou's Rangers, who've started out 8-2, off to a very good start, leading their division as well. I can't remember the last time we've seen two extremely great starts from two teams. Like, we're almost 10 games in for both teams, and we've seen 1 point missed out. Are we seeing a potential Stanley Cup matchup here, or are we thinking they're going to wear themselves out?
Vegas is a very deep team. Mm-hmm. Boston's unfortunately lost a lot of its offensive depth, just over time. Patrice Bergeron, obviously a big name.
Oh, yeah.
And David Krejci. I think Vegas will definitely keep this pace, or has the opportunity to keep this pace. Boston, if their defense keeps holding like it does, wow. 1.6 goals against per game so far. That's impressive. That is very rare. You almost never see that. And with a 97% penalty kill, like, they're, Boston's playing insane.
And we saw this last season. We're continuing to see it this season. Maybe proof that it's not a fluke. The goaltending tandem, Swayman and Ullmark, they haven't missed a beat in the regular season. They had that hiccup last year in the first round, cost them an advancement in the playoffs, but they seem to have bounced back fairly well.
Yeah. Credit to them, especially. Those two have been great. Charlie McAvoy also has been doing great, except for, mm-hmm. When he tried to murder that guy in Florida. And got a 4-game suspension for that. Boston's just really well coached, I think. Jim Montgomery has done a great job with them, and Don Sweeney, to his credit, has filled the gaps left.
Yep. Former Denver University or University of Denver head coach Jim Montgomery coaching the Boston Bruins there. Fun fact, Boston's given up only 6 more goals than the Sharks have scored this season. Let's turn our attention to the New York Rangers, also off to a very hot start. 8-2, leading the division by 3 points over the New Jersey Devils. Lou, this has to make you happy. This is something you probably didn't expect coming in.
No, I guess giddy is the best term. And only because I'm very surprised. They lost to the Nashville Predators before going off on a 5-game road trip. They lost that game 4-1 and were booed off the ice. In fact, I remember doing that game report and saying that really they ought to have brought up the Hartford Wolfpack and probably would have gotten a more emotional game out of them. But Peter Laviolette, the new head coach, has got them buying into his system. It's a 1-3-1 trap. And the thing is, there are players who've come back from last season, I think still stinging from the first round exit they made. And Artemi Panarin has a point in every one of their 10 games so far this season. He has 16 points on 5 goals. So he's lighting it up. Perhaps it's because he shaved his hair, his head. everyone is playing. And Laviolette has let the, they're no longer youngsters, but the, you know, the more youthful Alexis Lafreniere, Capo Caco, and Phil Hedel has let them play. Alexis Lafreniere scored in 3 games straight on the road trip, is playing really well. Caco is, he may not be scoring, but he's in every one of the plays, keeping the puck in the zone that, and the puck ending up with a goal. So whatever Laviolette is doing seems to be working. And, you know, playing all 3 zones, except for 1 bad game against, like I said, the Predators, they've won 6 straight now.
Yeah. And, I think we can accredit that to Panarin, you know, shaving off his hair. I bet he used something from Manscaped. Listeners, if you want to look as smooth as Artemi Panarin, go to manscaped.com/prohockeynews and save yourself 20% off the finest products for hair removal. I just had to get one in.
It's brilliant.
All right. This brings us to one of our favorite segments here, one of our longstanding traditions, the picks of the week. Jacob, what do we got?
Well, you're just happy because you went 5-0 last week.
Oh, ooh. Did I? I didn't even realize that.
How? You put the thing in. Anyways, Blue went 2-3 and I went 3-2. So, oh boy, season's off to a strong start once again. Deja vu already. funny enough, last season, Richard started off 4-1. And Lou started 2-3, and I went 1-4 at the start of last season. Mm. So hopefully we can bounce back. So for our first game, we got Boston at Detroit. Detroit's on a run. Richard, you're 5-0. I'm going to start with you.
Detroit on a run. Boston also on a run. I'm glad you gave them credit for that. Detroit's lost 1 in their last 10. They're on a 1-game losing streak, if you could call it that. But 6-3-1 in their last 10. I gotta go Boston. I mean, that goaltending tandem is just masterpiece.
Yeah, they might just put 2 goalies at once out at
they
once.
Should.
That would be
new game plan.
Yeah.
Put Swayman on skates. Leave Ullmark in the crease. Why not?
Okay, Lou, who do you got here?
I'm going to take Boston as well. I think the shine is starting to come off the Red Wings a bit.
Yeah, I'll go with you guys on that. I think Boston also has this game in the bag. Next, we got the Tampa Bay Lightning at Ottawa Senators. Lou, we'll start with you this time.
Boy, there's a stinker. well, Ottawa has been meh at best. The Lightning lost last night. I guess I got to take Tampa. Can't bet against. Where's the game?
It's in Ottawa.
In Ottawa.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'll take Tampa.
Okay, Richard.
I'm going to go Ottawa 3-3 at home, while Tampa Bay is 0-3-1 on the road. I'm going home team. Give me Ottawa.
Actually, yeah, you just convinced me that away record is not that great. So, and I do like the Ottawa Senators. I like Brady Tkachuk. I like Tim Stutzel. Going Ottawa. Next one, the Dallas Stars at Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks are off to big start, right off a 10-1 win against San Jose. Richard, who do you got?
Let's see. You know, I'm going to go with the Dallas Stars.
Okay. Lou?
I will take the Canucks.
I will also take the Canucks. I think they are going to be a very spooky team in the playoffs.
Yes.
If they make it, if they don't fall off a cliff, which they are famous for.
Well, but that was, well, I think they're all, I think most of their problems were removed from the locker room.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Next game, Carolina, New York Islanders. Richard?
Oh, I like this matchup. But Carolina, like, their spot in the standings, I don't think is as good as they're actually playing on the ice. They've had some pretty hard breaks. You know, a game against Colorado, they score 4 goals and end up losing. Nah, give me the Jerks. Jerks are taking it.
Okay. What about you, Lou?
Carolina lost to the Rangers last night, 2-1, while the Rangers skated with only 18 players. 2 went down with injury. So Carolina could not come back despite dominating in shots in the third. I'll bet Semyon Varlamov is the starting goalie for the Islanders. He's pitched 2 shutouts, 2 straight shutouts. So give me the Islanders.
Yeah, I'm also going with the Islanders. Carolina has been letting in a lot of goals.
Yes. I don't understand.
Yes, same here. And I just trust New York to have a better and more complete game. So one with the Islanders. And our last game, the Colorado Avalanche at the Vegas Golden Knights. Lou, we'll start with you.
Wow. I would ask Richard for some help on this one, but he's not going to help. No, you know what? Vegas will keep the run going. Give me the Golden Knights.
Okay, Richard.
Oh, I mean, Colorado's only 2 losses on the season have come on the road, but I don't know that they seem to have bounced back after those 2 shutout losses. They lost 2 games, 4-0 each. But you know what? They seem to have gotten their stuff together. I'm gonna take a gamble. I'm gonna go with the Avalanche on this one.
Okay, I'm going with Vegas. I like that team. I think they're a very built team, and I think they're gonna beat the Avalanche. I think it would be different if Landeskog was playing, though. I might have picked Colorado if Landeskog was there. But going with Vegas, and that's it for the picks of the week. If you'd like to follow along, please use the hashtag PHNPicks on X or Twitter or whatever it's called these days.
All right. The longstanding tradition, parting thoughts. Lou, what's on your mind?
Not a whole lot. Just everybody stay safe. If you're playing the game, watching the game, just stay safe.
All right. Jacob.
I got a new mic. Hopefully the audio quality is a lot better this edition. We'll see how it goes. I literally just got in the mail an hour before the podcast started, which is funny. I didn't know if I was going to have it today, but yeah. Once again, stay safe for everyone.
All right. I am outside of hockey. On cloud 9 right now. My Texas Rangers just won the World Series for the first time in the franchise's existence. I've been waiting a long time for this, and I can say I can now let go of a long-standing grudge against my dad for this. The story is he's a Massachusetts native. He was born just north of the Boston area, grew up there. I have a lot of family back in that area. So I do enjoy the Boston sports teams, but when I was a kid and I started getting into baseball, he went on a business trip to Dallas and brought me back a Texas Rangers t-shirt, and I was doomed ever since. I could have celebrated 3 World Series championships with the Red Sox. And don't get me wrong, I like the Red Sox. They're a fun team to watch. And their home ballpark is amazing. I went to go visit it before they put seats up on the Green Monster. But ever since I got into baseball, I've been a Texas Rangers fan and a long suffering Texas Rangers fan. I went to go see them play in the 2010 American League Championship Series where they got their very first home playoff win. 2010, first time they won a home playoff game. They went on to the World Series, lost to the Giants. The very next year, they went to the World Series again and lost, being 1 strike away twice to the St. Louis Cardinals. Heartbreak. finally, 2023, I didn't have to wait much more than five games for the Texas Rangers to finally win a championship. So I'm still coming down from that. I ordered some championship gear. It should be coming to my house. I've even recruited Emily as a Texas Rangers fan, but we are just ecstatic that the Rangers were able to come away with a championship. And yeah, doing good over here. Well, listeners, thank you for listening to this episode of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. Thanks to all of our sponsors, My Custom Sports Chair. If you would like to purchase a chair from them with any custom logo on there, head over to mycustomsportschair.com and use the code PHN15 to get 15% off your purchase. Thanks to the Chicago Wolves Merchandise Store. Thanks to Manscaped. We had already mentioned how you can get 20% from them. And thanks to LDE Affinity Jewelry. All of you make this podcast, able to be put on the air as they say. And thank you, listeners, for making us part of your routine. For Jacob Doherty and for Lou Lafredo, I am Richard Cote. Hopefully I'll be better spoken next time when I see you on the first line of the Pro Hockey News Podcast.